Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Big thanks to all of our sponsors, including our newest sponsor. It says here, Intelligent Conversation. We're now calling them Wise Conversations because Wise Markets is coming in. And we're going to be talking about ordering food from home. We're going to be talking about nutrition. We're going to be talking about a lot of things with our friends at Wise. Also, all summer long, and this fits right into the motif, there's a crab here as well. We're going to be eating crab cakes beginning on April 2nd. We're starting over at Fadley's. We're going to Costa's, and then we're going on a never-ending tour. It's going to be a little Willy Wonka crab cake thing. I might take Don Mohler to some places with me, but there might be some others. But I know he will be at State Fair with me eating Evan's crab cake. And, of course, El Guapo across the street with a margarita and a nightcap. But we're going to be on a mission. Pizza John's in Essex is going to see me. Ruth's Chris is going to see me in Pikesville and in downtown.
Yeah, you were talking Nacho Mamas, the Rec Room, the Towson Tavern. They all want – they all bragging on their crab cakes, Nestor.
If I say to anyone – if I said to you who has the best crab cake, you're going to say Linda Mohler probably.
Well, you're going to – I know when we introduce our next guest, that's where you're going to start. You're going to put him on the spot. So,
well, you know, I've asked everyone, and the mayor – the now mayor, former city councilman, Brandon Scott said Coco's. He's giving him Coco's plugs. I'm like, I'll meet you at Coco's for a crab cake, and we'll sit and talk about making the city better. Reverend Alvin Hathaway, it is always a pleasure to visit with you. I'm not sure if we had a crab cake at Jennings that first time, but I know we could the next time. If you're taking me somewhere, probably on a golf course, because as much as you love golf, where's your crab cake place? Where are you taking me? And you don't have to patronize me by saying Fadley's or Costas or any of my sponsors, but when you're taking a friend for a crab cake, where do you take me?
I'm going to take you on my time machine and take you back to Connolly's.
Oh, you are. That's the way back machine. We need the flux capacitor.
I knew I'd get you with that one, right?
I would take you to Angelina's on the east side. You know?
I tell you where I got my last crab cake coming. It was absolutely delicious. I was at Jimmy's.
There you go. All right. There's a plug for Dundalk. There you go. Good work.
Yes. I was there just the other day.
Well, Rev, it's been a while. I think we talked to you in the beginning of this pandemic about shelter and about food and about clothing. And it feels like for a lot of people, this spring is sprung. I put this up for Mohler because he's looking forward to opening day. And he needs one bright sky over the Orioles before the losing begins this year.
And a couple base hits. We're going to win a few more games.
Yeah, a few games. But when we left you, a lot of people are seeing bright sky. My wife has her vaccine. She's going to spend time with her mother next week for the first time in 2 years down in Florida because she's on the safer side of where we need to be. I have not gotten my vaccine. Don and his wife have theirs. Give me a little update for you, and we'll get to the community and all of that. But you're always an optimist, and we're Baltimore Positive. This is a time of optimism and should be for a lot of folks here, even those who are challenged right now.
Yeah, one of the things that's amazing, and we really have to give credit to our scientific community, our medical scientific community. Even here, one of the lead persons graduated from University of Maryland, Baltimore County, was one of the lead scientists on the Moderna vaccine. When you think about now that our technology infrastructure got cranked up to produce vaccines that would deal with the coronavirus, I think it gives us a sense of assurance that we can go out. For example, I've had both of my vaccines. I had the Moderna vaccine. My wife has as well. Last Saturday, I had a pop-up clinic at my church, and we served 270 persons with the Moderna virus vaccine. So I think we're getting there. We're getting there now. We've learned about social distancing. The joke in the street is that my hands have consumed more alcohol than my mouth. So everybody is now sanitizing and so forth. So I think we're getting there. We're learning as a community and as a culture what we need to do to combat this virus.
Hey Rev, let's take couple of those points. I was fascinated by the success of the Union Baptist vaccination clinic. Heartened and fascinated. Take us inside. Give us a look. How did that happen? How did that come about?
Man, when you think about it, first of all, you know, I have to give credit to Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford. He reached out. He wanted to develop an alternative for distribution center through faith-based institutions. I gave him my list of contacts throughout the city, and we began the planning of it. And then, man, my goodness, who's better at logistics than our National Guard? Man, our Maryland National Guard came out. Their surgeon came out. We outlined how best to transform our community center into a vaccine clinic. Then I had these amazing volunteers from my church who came out and supported. And it looked just like you were walking into any clinic USA. With the same kind of protocols, with the same kind of information data system, also with the same kind of vaccines. And Safeway Pharmacy sent a whole team and an arm of persons there. We had three actually vaccine setups. So you think about it. We did 270 shots in arms in 6 hours. That is absolutely phenomenal, and I got to commend everybody for doing that. I had one gentleman, 97 years old. His son called him up. Dad, you need to come get your vaccine. He got in his car, drove to Union Baptist Church, got his vaccine, and began to tell me about that he grew up with Perrin Mitchell and worked with him and Martin Marietta. He got his shot, then waited the 15 minutes. Our nurses talked with him. He got back into his car, drove back home.
Well, Rev, you're really, first of all, big Baltimore positive shout out to you and your team. Nestor and I always say when talking about you, you build coalitions better than almost anyone we know. What is it about Al Hathaway that allows him to bring together the Lieutenant Governor, Safeway, the Maryland National? What is it in your DNA that allows you to build these coalitions?
Well, you know, I grew up in the community of the church that I serve. I actually grew up in the block of Union Baptist Church. And one of the blessings of Union Baptist Church is that it has always been an activist congregation, an activist church. When you think about it, as a child, I was there at the current picket signs. I told you before, you know, a picketing gold seeker. You know, as a child, going and being a part of the desegregation of Gwin Oak Park. And then as I became older, there being a part of the political empowerment system with the Goon Squad as they worked to get Perrin Mitchell and Joe Howard and all them located. But then also, I'm a trained organizer. I was trained by the Industrial Areas Foundation in organizing, and so it has been a kind of a specialty of mine to understand that the only way we're going to have a vibrant society is that we work together across social, economic, and racial lines, and that's kind of been my my trademark over my years.
Well, Don, you're on mute, but we're with Reverend Al Hathaway. Go ahead, Donna.
Mute. You know, it is a Saturday
Night
Live.
It's only happened twice this year, Rev, since we started this.
Yeah, not often.
Trying to put Mohler on mute since 82.
You know what I mean? But he knows sign language, so you still can't stop him.
So Rev, one of the things that struck me, and I want you to shed some light on this issue. You, with very little notice, got 700 people of color to come to your church to be vaccinated. And I think what we are all trying to follow is what may end up being a bit of an urban legend, and that is that African Americans are going to resist getting the vaccine. And the concern I have about that narrative, and maybe you can weigh in, the concern that I have about the narrative is that it becomes an excuse for disparate distribution of the vaccine. We hold up, well, you know, African Americans don't want it, but yet we turn around and say, well, I'm not sure because Reverend Hathaway had a heck of a turnout in a couple of hours. What do you see happening on the streets of the folks you represent in terms of their willingness to get a vaccine?
Okay, just take a snapshot of a Saturday in a community. This is March the 13th. They're right there, and I'm a proud member of the Prince Hall Masons. So we did 2,200 vaccinations at the Prince Hall Mason Lodge of Johnson & Johnson product, and then we did 270 vaccinations of the Minerva product there at Union Baptist Church. So right in that community, within two blocks, we did over 2,500 vaccinations in a six-hour period of time. There is no hesitancy. What the issue is availability. If you make the vaccine available, people will take the vaccine because they recognize that they want to not only protect themselves, they want to protect their loved ones. And that's the issue with this whole disparity in healthcare. If you make it available, people will take advantage of the healthcare system if it's affordable and available.
Rev, let's talk about that narrative that Don brought up. Do people, I mean, look, I'm on Facebook. I'm from Dundalk. I mean, you know, there's a whole world of Trumplandia that's not taking the vaccine. And I've joked without joking that, well, it moves me closer to the front of the line. You know, the first chance I get, I'm going to get vaccinated. But I do know people of all shapes and sizes and colors and denominations that are afraid of needles, think it doesn't pertain to them. Not everyone's in a hurry to get the vaccine. In your community, in your church, do you have old school, maybe not so scholarly people to some degree and think that this isn't a good idea? Does that come up in your church or in your walk of life? It comes up in mine for sure.
I've had some persons that would say that, you know, and they'll reflect back to a time that they would talk about the Henrietta Lacks. They'll talk about the syphilis study. They talk about those things, and I say to them that, you know, that's true. But one of the things that you have to recognize with this current era is that the protocols that were put in place, the disciplines that was put in place, the kind of analytic abilities that was put in place, this is a very safe vaccine, and it will give us a level of affection. Now, the beauty about America is you got choice. So if you choose not to, I had a lady, she was 97 years old. And I asked her, member of my church, my dear beloved, almost like a great grandmother to me. I called her up. I said, we've got the opportunity to give you the vaccine. You know what she said to me? She said, hey, I'm 97 years old. I have not taken a flu shot. I will not take a COVID shot. God is going to take care of me. Now, how could I not? She's 97 years old. I said, you are right. God is holding you in the hollow of your hand.
Well, you certainly weren't going to tell her that God wasn't going to take care of
her. No, right.
She knew who to say that. She knew who to say that to. Nestor and I are visiting with our good friend, Pastor Union Baptist, regular here on Baltimore Positive, Reverend Al Hathaway. Reverend, in addition to vaccine, you're continuing your activism with well, you talk about being an organizer. It's the thing that people are envious of. You started a quiet little group called Act Now Baltimore, and boy, it's not a quiet little group anymore. Give us an update about how that organization has grown.
Yeah, well, it's amazing. Act Now Baltimore really began during the election period, where we were basically saying that people wanted accountability, credibility, and transparency in their elected officials. We conducted a study. Wow, that study was 16,000, a survey of 16,000 people in Baltimore City, strategically through each of the 14 councilmatic districts. And what they discovered was that there was this high level, almost 75% distrust. When you think about elected officials, there was this high level of results as it related to belief in the public educational system and a whole series of areas that shown that there were people that did not believe that government was acting in their best interest, nor the political leaders were acting in their best interest. So as I moved through that phase, I said, wait a minute, why don't we set up hubs in each of the 14 districts so that we can have portal directly to the people? And so I went across the city, talked to my colleagues and friends, and we've established hubs in each of the 14 districts in Baltimore City. What has happened now is that when people recognize that there were these portals, I've had other faith communities want to join. So we've got clusters now. That's what the lieutenant governor tapped into. He said, hey, I wanted to have the distribution of vaccines throughout the city. So I gave him the list of our hubs, and he moved through Guardian Angel, New Shiloh Baptist Church, Union Baptist Church, and he's going over to the bilingual church for others and using that hub network for equal distribution of vaccines. But what has happened is that a third of the council is new. So I said to the council, I said, wait a minute, you only won with, at best, 6,000 votes. But in your councilmatic district, there are 43,000 people. How are you going to communicate with them? And how are you going to know what their issues are and their needs are? You need portals like the faith community to reach into the community. And that's what we've been doing to hold our city council people accountable, credible, and be transparent. And you're finding that that's the lingua of the day.
Well, let's stay with. Go ahead, Nestor.
Yeah, I'm a. You know, I read some books from time to time, and remember the Paul Revere stories from what's the Canadian guy, Don? Give me his name. The Canadian author. Malcolm Gladwell, right?
Okay,
and
yes.
He writes about Paul Revere and sort of saving America in that he knew people in every town with the light when he went, right? And I, you know, getting to know you over the last couple of years, one of my favorite Baltimoreans for sure. But when a pandemic breaks out, do you feel like at some point it's a little bit of your life's work when government's reaching to you and you can, you know, you put those needles in people's arms, you know, that influence and the things that you've done have built you for a plague to help out? I mean, over the last year, you seem much more equipped to be helpful than maybe politicians, business, or a lot of other people, especially feet on the street here in Baltimore.
You know, I grew up with a kind of a social gospel perspective. And so to me, if the Bible is to be real, it must be lived and it must be seen. There's a poem that says, I'd rather see a sermon than hear one any day. I'd rather someone show me than simply tell me the way. The eye's a better pupil than I say. I'd rather see a sermon than hear one any day. And I've been blessed to attempt to live the sermon, live the words that I believe. And I believe that is in the tradition of these social gospel persons that you know of, whose names are written in the stellar stars of our iconic leaders. And I was also blessed that to have the Reverend Vernon Dobsons, the Dr. Marion Bascoms, the Clarence Mitchell Jr. and C3 and C4, all of these people were part of my lived experience. So I really have nowhere else to turn, because when I go to sleep at night, they talk to me. They say, what are you doing? We taught you better than this. So I'm always seeking to be engaged, because that is my learned and lived experience.
Well, you've always dealt with people struggling, right? And now all of a sudden, Don and I have made a living here over the last year talking to people struggling who were doing pretty well before the pandemic. You know, as Mike Tyson says, everybody has a plan till the punch comes, right? We all got punched a year ago this week, right? In yeah. one way, shape, or whatever, every walk of life, everyone on the planet got rocked, and everyone was looking for something and some leadership to get us to this point where I feel like shots are going in arms, businesses are opening up, science, you know, all these things that we fought wars about, we invested in science and money, that when the boogeyman of the pandemic would happen, like it did in the movies, that right. when it actually happened and came here, we would have resources to withstand it, right? I mean, and I guess that's what we're looking to at this point, but it's taken all boats, literally all, everyone in our culture, to get us to this point where we might be able to pull ourselves out of it.
Yeah, yeah. Think about this. The question became, when you think about, if you know anything about church history, there was a point in time when the church was driven underground. And that's what happened with this pandemic. Literally, the church was driven underground. But as I understand church history, that's when the church was most active. And so I've been trying to demonstrate to my colleagues and to my friends that you can have ministry even in the midst of COVID. So just think about it. Here, Union Baptist Church has been one of the leading entities in our city around how you do ministry outside the walls. Just simply because your doors are closed, does that mean that your ministry should be shut down? And I've been trying to demonstrate that to people.
Well, it makes it actually bigger, right? Because I can come to your church right now without having to get in a car or come over and park, right?
Exactly.
You know, the online part of this has opened it up for everyone.
Oh, yeah. I have the virtual experience. I mean, here I would say, and I thank the divine for this. My membership has grown, my viewership has grown, and my giving has grown in the midst of this pandemic. And then one of the things I said, compelled by that, I heard so many people talking to me about their pain. There is a disconnect between our council members and the constituents that they are supposed to serve. And so when you talk to the constituents, they talk about these water bills that are out of whack. They talk about the need for services that they do not receive. And so we've stepped into that vacuum to be their advocates, because they need advocates that tells and says to the city council members that you are not just a legislator, you are a representative of people, and you have to represent their interests clearly and accurately if you're going to be their servants. If not, you're going to find that you may not be in that office the next time go around.
Well, you talk about praying for help. There's praying for help, and then there's actually asking for help, right?
Oh,
like
yes,
calling somewhere where you can get your water bill taken care of.
Well, if you understand this, not only do you ask, you also demand, because you pay taxes and you should receive benefits for the taxes that you pay. We should not take a backseat to anyone for the services that we are entitled to. And that's been some of the challenges in our community. We've accepted and went along and gone along thinking that it's still true. The squeaky wheel gets the grease.
There is no doubt. And boy, Rev, when you bring that point up about disconnect between communities and the folks who represent them, I want to throw an issue your way and tell me how you see it and the folks in ACT Now see it, because I hear it a lot. If you hear it once, right, you say, well, maybe. But if you hear it 3, 4, 5, 6 times, what I hear over and over is that people in Baltimore City, the residents, want their city to be cleaner. They think it's dirty, and they're sick of the graffiti. Now, I don't hear a lot of talk about those two issues from elected officials, yet I do hear it from the citizens. What is your take about those two issues, about people just wanting their city to be cleaner and get rid of the daggone graffiti?
Yeah, you're right on point. There is clearly, and we've been quietly for the last 2 years. I have a team of persons, largely sponsored by Wheel Abrader, that's been demonstrating that we could have literally the old hoagie cart persons. I have a team of 12 people in 3 areas of our city that's been cleaning the perimeters of the faith-based institutions in the South, in the East, and in the West. We've been paying them $15 an hour, and they've been cleaning 8 hours a week. And you can demonstrably see the difference in the areas that they are cleaning against the areas that are adjacent to them. And so we have been saying to the city that there is a simple way. People want a clean city. That's a basic that should be given. And so I was on the front lines arguing when our Department of Public Works were being mistreated in terms of their pay. They are the essential workers. They are the people that we need. So when you think about a city, and I get this, if I have just a second just to tell you. I went to Seoul, Korea, and it was the most amazing thing. In Seoul, Korea, those young people that are basically 16 to 18 are brought into public service. They're the ones that you see with their little green uniforms on. They're watching things that's going on. But one of their responsibilities is to keep the city clean.
It's a social responsibility there.
Exactly. Exactly.
I tell people in Japan, and this is true, in Japan, Don, when you're in Tokyo, when you go in and eat, you take your trash with you.
Right.
It's considered completely disrespectful to leave your trash in someone else's home. If I came to your house and ate on paper plates, I would take them in my car, take them home. I would not expect you to throw them out. It's social. Well, it's different.
Well, now I'm really – the rep does this to me. Gets me jazzed up. So I want to jump back to this pilot that you have.
Yes.
Because right away I'm thinking, come on now. We've got some substantive data that shows a few neighborhoods are cleaner. Yes. And what I heard Reverend Hathaway say was, I'm paying some folks, a handful of folks, $15 an hour for 8 hours a week. And Don, I'm telling you, the neighborhoods around these churches where we've piloted this are noticeably cleaner. Is that part accurate?
Yes, it is accurate. And you're going to see us. I am systematically moving that through our hubs. So last week I went into Penn North at Gethsemane Baptist Church, sent in a team in there, cleaned it, stem to stern. And the people got engaged when they saw that they had people to help them. And one of the things I'm going to do, you're going to get this right on, I'm planning now to flood the city of Baltimore. It'll be sometime in the latter part of May, early part of June. My goal is to put 3,000 people on the street of Baltimore, cleaning Baltimore City. That is what we should be doing. Think about it.
Is that Baltimore's, a day? Are you doing like a Make Baltimore Beautiful day?
Yes, it is. It's going to be an ACT Now cleanup day.
Well, I mean, well, let's.
You got
let's,
Baltimore let's, positive. We're all in. Sponsor. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be there. Yes, absolutely. Nestor and I will be there. But now, I want to, man, I don't want to leave this.
Okay.
Sometimes we jump from topic to topic because, you know, we never talk without talking. And you and I have chatted before about the squeegee kids. Okay. Yeah. Now, I'm hearing you talk and I'm saying, man, Mr. Mayor, and we love Brandon. We've had Brandon on a number of times. Mr. Mayor, let's have some ambassadors go out to these squeegee kids and let's get them on board with Reverend Hathaway's cleanup program. Let's give them nice golf shirts or whatever it is. Let's give them the cart. And I'm envisioning in a very short period of time, Reverend, a cleaner city that makes people feel better and start to believe again. It's not a, but it's not just smoke
and kids
and mirrors.
Who want to work can make $100 today.
Yeah, and it's not just symbolic; it's real, right, Rev?
Oh, let me tell you something. I mean, you want to? I mean, I've floated ideas. I'm waiting for people to think. Just think, I can give you three specific things that young people can do that can make for a cleaner city and be revenue generating. I mean, they can make money. Now, give me an example. I said to one of the former mayors, I said, why don't we have those persons that you want to call squeegee kids go down to the port of Baltimore where they are bringing in over 5,000 cars literally a month and clean and wash those. They got to wash them. They do it there. Man, they gave me all kinds of excuses. The unions, they need quick cars. I said, that's not, government shouldn't give me excuses. Government should be giving me solutions.
And that's a great idea. Rev, I'm telling you, people driving in their car right now are saying, come on, listen to the Rev. Send the kids who want a little spare money in their pocket. Send them to the port. Send the kids out cleaning. I mean, Rev, what role does ACT now? This is where I think the rubber meets the road, right?
Yeah.
So what? How many members now? You up to 17,000?
Oh man, no, man. You give my secret away.
Uh-oh.
By June, I will have over 100,000 members in Baltimore City.
Come on.
Yes.
Last time we talked, it was 16,000.
16,000. Yeah, I'm up to 60,000 right now. This will be the tipping point. I'm getting calls from Chicago, Detroit, Atlanta, St. Louis. They want ACT Now Baltimore's in ACT Now Detroit, ACT Now St. Louis, ACT Now Atlanta, ACT Now Chicago. This thing is growing. This is a movement. It is a God movement. It is greater than even myself. And so, but people want to have action. They want to have activity.
Wow.
They want solutions in their communities.
Well, 100. Trash is, first and foremost, you talk about pride, right? Like literally, when you talk about going over the church, you said you were Penn North last week.
Yes.
You said you cleaned it stem to stern. I'm thinking the constituents, the community, anybody involved in it walks in there and says, never seen it look this nice, right? Like,
right.
Didn't know it could look this nice, right? Right. What else is possible out there? But also the next day when they come, keeping it hopefully that nice, like my mom taught me.
Well, I was struck by, I love food, I love to travel, and we got hooked on this CNN series, Searching for Italy, with Stanley Tucci. If anybody likes food and likes to travel, check out CNN Stanley Tucci series. And he's traveling all around Italy to sample the culture and the food, and it's just very, very entertaining. But going to what you just said, Nestor, and what the Reverend is talking about, when he got, I guess it was Florence, it won't make a difference which city, but I think it was Florence, and he and his family spent some time there when he was a young boy. And his first comment was, boy, it's a lot cleaner.
Right.
Cleaner is something that people notice. Stanley Tucci doing a TV show says, it's a lot cleaner than when we lived here. 100. Rev, this is not only a group for social change. This is you have created a political force, Rev.
It is, but it's big P. It's not little P. It's not the electoral politics of P. It's more like where leaders interact with other leaders for the betterment of society and their community. It's big P. And so I want people to understand simply this. When you activate people, people is what makes government. Government is not the people that sit in the offices. It's the people that are governed. And you have to have shared governance if you're going to have an active, vibrant society and a civic community.
Again, we are with Reverend Al Hathaway, Union Baptist Church. Just inspires Nestor and me every time he is on. Rev, you got lots to do. Before we let you run, last time you were on with us, there were two development projects sort of coming into focus. One was PS 103, the Thurgood Marshall School,
yes.
And the other was the redevelopment of McCullough Homes. I think you're feeling pretty good about one and pretty frustrated about the other. Let's start with the one that you're feeling good about, PS 103. Tell our listeners what that's all about.
Just think about the Baltimore City, the place that launched to the world Justice Thurgood Marshall. And here's the school that Justice Thurgood Marshall attended in West Baltimore, PS 103. PS 103 was designed by a gentleman, his name was George Fredericks. Now think about the brilliance of a George Fredericks. He wasn't yet 30 years old. He had designed Baltimore City Hall. He designed Baltimore City College. He designed the state Capitol and Lawyers Mall and designed the Howard P. Rawlins Conservatory. And now he designs a building in 1877, PS 103, in West Baltimore. And that is the only building not in service and has been vacant for 20 years. If you're talking about disparities, there's something wrong with that. The other thing is that here's a school that Justice Thurgood Marshall attended. Justice Thurgood Marshall attended there for 8 years. Not only did Justice Thurgood Marshall attend there, Kiefer Mitchell attended there. You had persons from the Murphy family attend there. George Russell Jr. attended there. This is an amazing educational place. And so we have been able to get the National Park Service to do a study to make it an asset. Here is what will happen. You will have not only Fort McHenry as a National Park Service entity, you will have PS 103, Justice Thurgood Marshall Center, and I'm being prophetic, that's going to be also a National Park Service entity as well. And right now, we're raising the dollars, we're making it happen, we're doing the legislative work, we're doing the community work to make this one of the most vibrant schools and centers. We brought Judge Alexander Williams, that's down at University of Maryland College Park, he's bringing his clinic right in there around justice, law, and ethics. It's going to be an amazing thing that we're going to do in this facility.
Go ahead, Nestor.
Tell me more about the facility on a day. Once it gets open, what's the vision for what it's going to do on a daily basis?
In the vision now, we're going to have the Justice Alexander Williams Law Clinic for legal justice and ethics. So people will become there. We're going to do ethical report cards for public officials and government officials and corporations. So we're going to teach ethics. The other thing we're going to do is that we will have lawyers that were there to provide legal services to people in the community that need access to legal services. We will also address issues that are of need. So we will file, America's briefs. We will challenge things in court. It will be a dynamic center in the spirit of Justice Thurgood Marshall, Clarence Mitchell, and others. The other thing that it will do is that we're going to have a program that says Shock Trauma right now. That's a violence reduction program that looks at gun violence. That program that's there and at Prince George's County Hospital, we're going to be located there. Dr. Joseph Richardson, who is one of the foremost authorities on gun violence, he's going to have his wraparound services and his study right there at that center as well. And then we're going to have cultural things there. We're going to have the Chroma Gallery, one of the outstanding galleries around artwork, will be there. My offices for Love Community, the National Park Service will have their office there. And then we have spaces for the community as well.
Every time we drop your name, Don, we get a guest idea, right?
Oh, my goodness. I'm telling you. And Rev, I know folks are listening at home or driving around, and now they want to contribute. They're saying, man, I want to be a part of that. Where do folks find out how to help you to contribute some money to this effort?
Yeah, we have what's called belovedcommunity.org. Beloved Community is the sponsoring entity for this. And I think if you just go to belovedcommunity.org, you can be supportive of the work that we're doing there.
Well, that is terrific. Now, there was another project that put a little giddy up in your step. You were excited about it. You were working hard. You raised, I think, $200 million for redevelopment over in McCullough Homes. And maybe, first of all, tell folks where McCullough Homes is, why it's significant, and why right now it's sort of stuck in the mud.
If you think about the change, if you want to have a demonstrative change in West Baltimore, the highway to nowhere, everybody recognizes that that parcel that is just an abomination. State Center, that there's been long-term talk about redevelopment that has not yet occurred. Right parallel to that and right beside that is McCullough Homes. So if you take State Center, that's 25 acres. You take McCullough Homes, that's 35 acres. You talk about 55 acres of substandard property right in the center of West Baltimore. If you transform that, you transform West Baltimore. So I took on the task with my team to say, hey, wait a minute, we can have a plan for redeveloping McCullough Homes. And we put a term sheet on the table, $172 million. We had Opportunity Zone money that would be the other $300 million. Didn't need any kind of public support other than some of the entitlement stuff that you needed to do. And it got caught up in the politics of the town. And from that I've been extremely upset. It didn't help my blood pressure.
What are those? Hey Rev, don't gloss over those for us. What are? And again, we don't want you to, you know, you're not the kind of guy that throws rocks at people. What are the politics that got caught up in? I think that's what people say. Well, things sound so positive. How could it get caught up in things?
Well, it happened during the time when you had an administration that separated the HABC from DHCD. And then in that process of that separation, you had a new director from out of town in HABC who was just trying to learn the agency, trying to learn their job, trying to learn their community. And so here comes this proposal to hit their table, and they just weren't ready for it. Didn't have the capacity for it, didn't have the forethinking, didn't understand the community well enough to understand how significant it was. And then all of their attention was turned to Perkins Homes, which is in East Baltimore. So when you think about it, there have been a fumbling of the ball in West Baltimore, of the place of Freddie Gray. They demolished some project. But what's the plan? Down at Poe Homes, there near University of Maryland, they offered something, but there's no plan. Then you got McCullough Homes. There's no plan. You got Spencer Gardens near Pennsylvania Avenue. There's no plan. So you brought in a new person. They were overwhelmed. They had this major project on Perkins Home and did not have the ability to multitask to understand that here was a community-based plan that would have been where we were ready to execute to redo a significant portion of the community.
Well, something tells me, if I know you, you're not the kind of guy to just say, well, we lost, let's move on. I'm kind of guessing that Al Hathaway doesn't say, well, we tried, but so what?
When people recognize that there's 100,000 people in Baltimore City listening, I think they will understand that they need to take action.
Rev, it's always great to visit with you. You know, I would say, what are you up to? But this Act Now thing, I'm going to pull it up here for everyone so they can see. I pulled up two of the sites. I have Beloved Community here as well. WeAreBeloved.org is the way to find out all of the information there. And then Act Now Baltimore, which is really your hub. I've signed up here. Accountability, credibility, transparency. We talk about getting things done here in Baltimore and getting shots out. I want to make sure we've shouted those out for you. I hope that you two get together and play some golf because I know you love that.
Yes, we will.
Baseball games. And Rev, when you put together this cleanup in late May, please, come on back and visit us in 2 months, and we'll certainly, get that thing out and try to get some more feet on the street to help you out.
I sure will. And I'm going to give a shout out to the Knights of Columbus. They've already volunteered. I'll give a shout out to Atlas Restaurant Group. They've always volunteered. Give a shout out to Salvation Army. This is going to be amazing. Bridge Maryland has always volunteered. This will be a true movement for good in our city. And I believe that's going to help our city move forward.
Before we sign off and you and I will make some golf plans off the air, not to blow smoke at you, Rev, whenever we're done talking with you, I am so optimistic about our city's future. And I would say to all of our listeners, if you don't believe Baltimore City's best days are in front of it, then you don't know and understand Reverend Al Hathaway. So, Reverend, just thanks for everything you're doing and never, ever stopping.
Thank you. Bless you. And I welcome being a part of Baltimore Positive. Next thing, I'm going to have my cheerleader gear on. You got to get me one of them sharp sweatshirts.
Hey, listen, I'm coming over to your study over there. It looks like a Clue game there with all those books. I'm going to like the library, take a couple of those books out of there, see what you're reading.
Man, the problem is I had to read them all.
I don't have enough time to have you tell us how much you've learned, but I'll bring you back in 2 months and we'll help you clean the city up. It's always good to visit with you.
Thank you now.
You got it. Reverend Al Hathaway, Act Now Baltimore, the way to find that. Of course, my partner in crime, Don Moeller, talking crab cakes and talking food, as well as getting together. By the way, Don, before we let the Rev go, Jackie McCusker said, we're trying to find the beauty in COVID, right? Like, literally, she said that. So we're trying to find the beauty in COVID, and Don will be doing the beauty of Camden Yards on opening day. We're going to get back to Fadley's and Costas. We're doing a crab cake tour this summer. Lots and lots of things going on. We appreciate you listening. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.